Hello, everybody, and welcome to Man on the Rocks. It is I, Joe. Joining me this way, we have Atlas.
Hello, everybody.
This week, we're talking about the new set, Outlaws of Thunder Junction. There's a lot of fun cards, and we don't really talk about any of the new cards coming out. We kind of just complain about Bowmasters in the One Ring constantly. So that'd be a fun switch up. Talk about a bunch of the fun cards that is in this set. But I don't know about y'all. I personally have way more fun listening to Atlas talk about the announcements. So Atlas, what we got coming up?
I think right now the main things is that this week, Punt City 3.
Punt City week, baby.
Yep, Pennsylvania. So really excited to be able to participate in that. It's going to be a lot of fun. If anyone's listening to this, hopefully I get to play against you or meet you or something. That'd be cool. So that's going to be an awesome experience. Really looking forward to it. And then after that, there are two other events on my radar right now. Nothing else for April, but the start of May, second week, May 11th, Tabletop Village in Seattle. They are hosting their first event. It's going to be a 10 proxy event for CEDH. I'll be competing in it at this point, so long as all goes well. The registration link is up on their website. Keep an eye out for that. Go over to the website, take a look, see if you're able to make it. Be really fun. Be great to support a new shop putting on another event.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. And then also 2 weeks after that, on May 25th, I know it's a holiday weekend, but Gabby's Olympic Cards and Comics is doing their next quarterly event. And that's our local shop, so we'll both be competing in that. It'll be a ton of fun. A lot of sick brews there. Some really good players showing up for sure. And then, of course, this is their first time that they're hosting 100% proxy-friendly event. So it means your whole deck could be proxied if you...
Got no excuse to not show up now.
Exactly. There is no excuse. So hopefully you're able to make the drive or make the time and show up and show your support for another LGS that's decided to host 100% proxy-friendly CEDH tournaments, because that's what we're all about.
Absolutely.
So I think that's kind of it for right now. Hopefully some more stuff will pop up for June here, or like maybe something else for the end of April come up last second. But I think that's everything I've got for now.
Yeah. Got a bit of housekeeping I want to address as well, kind of as we're doing the intro portion. So recently, the show is still going to continue. I'm just going to get out in front of that. I still want to do the show, but I think Atlas and I talked about this, and we want to just slow the show down a little bit. We're thinking probably every other week releases, and then after we hit episode 50 in our next local brew, we kind of want to restructure the channel a little bit. We're running out of ideas pretty frequently, which is an issue that I thought we could combat. But as easy as it is to do like the standard content game and like wait for the next like big outcry or whatever, like talk about the new set or whatever, like that's not why we're here. That's not why I like talking about Magic cards, just to talk about like the news of the day or the news of the week or whatever. Like I like having in-depth high level discussions with you, Atlas, and being able to share this conversation with y'all, the viewers. And I would prefer us to... I have the philosophy of I'd rather us produce better content less often than lower end content more frequently, if that makes sense. And we want to do more of a focus on like gameplay, and that's something that we're going to put like a lot of... I want to put a lot more time and effort into, because I think that's an area of the channel that we haven't quite explored, and I think it'd be interesting. Yeah. That's all I gotta tack on to that one. Anyway, on to this week's lucky patron. Shout out to Dave Bryden. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you a lot, my friend. You should come on down and get a drink with us. Let's talk about fucking Thunder Junction.
Aren't you excited for Omnath in a cowboy hat?
I think I missed that one. What?
Omnath in a cowboy hat. Five. It costs Wooburg and a colorless.
How did I miss this guy?
Because it's fake.
Oh.
It was April Fool's joke.
that explains why I missed it.
It was like ward. Yeah, it was like a 6/6 ward 6/6 mana.
Oh,
color conditioned.
I did hear about this.
Yeah, it was funny. It was a good April Fool's joke. Had a bunch of people going.
Yeah. For context, we're recording this on April Fool's Day. Yeah, I don't know. Since I functionally have gotten off of, like, all social media, like, April Fool's Day is kind of just, like, another funny day that, like, I occasionally need to remember that it's April Fool's Day. I did, however, watch the professor's April Fool's video, and that shit had me rolling.
Well, yeah, I didn't see it. What was it?
He just talks about the current state of Magic the Gathering, but it's, like, framed as an April Fool's joke. I'm ruining the video for anyone who hasn't watched it, but, like, I imagine if you're here, you probably have seen it. It's really, really good. He just talks about all the shit going on in Magic, and then at the end he's like, April Fool's, that's the joke. The joke is, I said April Fool's. Everything else I said is completely real, by the way. And it's like, God damn, he went fucking in.
Yeah, that's funny. I'll have to go check out that video.
Yeah, super, super good. Would highly recommend. But yeah, this set's got a lot of cool stuff in it. I feel like a lot of, like, because this is a standard set, I feel like a lot of standard sets don't really have a lot of cards these days, or we don't frequently get a lot of cards that are, like, CDH adjacent.
Yeah, this set had, it has a lot of, like, options. Like, I'm not sure there's going to be any staples that come out of this set.
No, I don't think maybe, so either.
Like, maybe one or the one or two usual, like, quote-unquote staples that you see come out of a set, but there are a lot of cards I think that have the potential to make appearances in lists going forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Especially mm-hmm. things with like the spree mechanic and whatnot, and there are a lot of legendary creatures that provide options because they aren't terrible at all.
No, they really aren't. There's a lot of like actual design intrigue going on in a lot of the commanders, like even the new Malcolm, the Is It Malcolm, that's a decent card. That's a good card. Every Is It Malcolm deck is absolutely playing this guy in the 99.
Yeah, definitely. Or it's like if you're in Jeskai Pirates or anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything Is It Malcolm, you're just jamming it because one, it's a pirate. You like pirates. Two, is card draw. Like, what more do you want?
Card draw to sink all the mana made from your other Malcolm into.
Exactly. That's where you can put all the extra treasures because the deck had an issue outletting its mana. Yeah, the spree mechanic specifically feels like almost tailor-made for like ad nauseum decks exactly because all of them are one CMC and then they're additional costs to cast for essentially the full spell. I don't know. Spree's a weird mechanic, dude.
It's cool. I like it. I also don't hate that it pushes Turbo a little bit further by giving them, like, modal spells. So it gives them options without, like, making their curve unnozzable with. That said, I'm not sure they need many more tools. Because no. I think the deck Turbo decks are still, like, very viable. Nozlists are still very strong. Even in, like, the current, like, meta that we have. It's just one of those things where it gives them just a little extra bit of an edge to stay relevant.
I really like the black one. That's like a bad vampiric tutor kind of, but it's also a draw spell. I like that it's target player, so like if you're ever in a point where you have like, I don't know, Born Upon the Wind or like Emergent Zone active, you can just like force someone to draw off like a Thoracle if you really want to like commit hard to that plan. I think that's cool. I think the modes are pretty like interesting for most of the spree cards. I'll have to like refresh my mind as I'm like scrolling through all the actual cards, but I like the black one, I like the white one, I like the green one that's kind of like a fixed tooth and nail. That card's kind
of
cool.
I think that card has a lot of potential to be honest. What is it, Smuggler's Surprise?
Something like that. Hold on, let's find this card real quick.
It's Smuggler's Surprise. It's one green for an instant speed card with spree. The additional costs and modes are two generic, to mill four cards. You may put up to two creature and or land cards from among the milled cards into your hand. The next one is one green and four. You may put up to two creature cards from your hand onto the battlefield. And the last mode is one extra generic. Creatures you control with power four or greater gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn.
I like the middle option. I my eyes immediately like beelined for that, and then I immediately looked up to see instant. I went, yeah, we can play this. We can jam it.
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of like, it's not, like, strictly better, and it's only half of, but it is an instant speed, sort of, like, tooth and nail adjacent card.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of neat. Sort of something along the lines of, what is it? shared summons.
A little bit, yeah. Except you get to put creatures from hand to battlefield rather than two creatures from deck to hand, which, like, matters a little bit, kind of. You're mainly using it as, like, a top-end finisher kind of piece.
Yeah, you can, like, set up a game, and it gives you an option for an instant speed outlet. Basically, mm-hmm. You just do your creature combo.
Yeah, and at worst, it's, like, kind of a cantrip, sort of. In the decks, I think, like, want this effect, you're playing a lot of creatures anyway.
Yeah. My personal favorite is the white one, for sure. The final showdown.
Yeah.
Because all these spree cards are costed at, like, one, maybe two, as their actual casting cost, and they have the plus on them. But final showdown is a white with the modes of plus one, generic, all creatures lose all abilities till end of turn, so sort of like a dressdown-esque effect, but it doesn't affect the rest of the turn. The other one is plus one generic, choose a creature you control, gains indestructible till end of turn. The last mode is two white and three generic to destroy all creatures. So you kind of got, and it's an instant, right? So you kind of got like a route style thing going on.
How far have we, like, fallen from route being, like, the go-to, like, white instant speed board wipes? Now we're just, like, putting that on a 6-mana card with potential upside, and it's modal, and it's low CMC cost.
I don't know. It seems pretty good to me.
It's a very good card. I do like it a lot. So, like, the all creatures lose all abilities until end of turn. It's not like a dress-down style effect where it's static. It's one-shot, right?
Yeah, it's a one-shot. So when it resolves, all creature cards that are on the battlefield at that time, all the creatures will lose all their abilities until end of turn. But if something else resolves immediately afterwards, that card will retain its text. So notably, something, an interaction, like... Grand Abolisher and Dressdown, you can't protect yourself from an opponent's Abolisher by casting Final Showdown in response to their... Or sorry, you can't protect yourself from an opponent's Grand Abolisher by casting Final Showdown in response like you could with Dressdown.
Yeah, but, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. But you could, like, cast Final Showdown with the first mode, so 2-mana Showdown to blank all of the stacks creatures that are going on, like, erase text from Rule of Law creatures or Collector Roof or something, and then immediately follow that up with, like, Dockside Extortionist and Timber Sabertooth to win the game or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm. I like this card. I think it's a fun tool against, ironically, like, we talk about Thrasios and Kinnan a lot. This is a really good card against Kinnan. Like, kind of have to get them at, like, a weird point, but also shutting down all their creatures is pretty cool.
I think that this card is, like, I think it's sweet, and I think it's really cool. I don't think a lot of decks are gonna play it outside of, like, maybe Blue Farm and possibly, like, some Esper lists. I just don't see, I think this being a really good offensive card. I see this being a very poor defensive card. Like, it's weird because, like, the destroy all creatures mode, it exists, and it's an instant even, so, like, as a control list, you could totally play this card, use the to blank someone's Kinnan or something, right? Like you were saying. Or you could just, like, fire off 6-mana at end step, clear the board, go to your turn, and then just, like, play a land and, like, your Planeswalker or a land in your commander and pass or whatever. But I don't think this card is going to be an auto include, and I also don't think it's actually going to even replace Dressdown in a lot of situations.
I think if you have access to Dressdown, I think you have to be very hard pressed to want this effect over Dressdown.
Yeah, like it the best thing it does is it opens you up to, like, you can cast this and then go into Thoracle where you can't with Dressdown, but also I think Dressdown is just a lot stronger because it replaces itself. It's harder to counter, being not misstepable, not dispellable, and then you can use it defensively as well as offensively, and it pitches to force. Like, Dressdown is still, like, at least probably one, maybe even two tiers higher than this card, at least in my opinion. But I do think this card will see play for sure.
I think it gets tested, absolutely. I see this card and I think, well, like, Dressdown kind of covers the things you want this card to cover, and, like, Angel's Grace kind of protects you the way that I feel like a 1-mana instant like this card kind of almost wants you to be. I feel like it's kind of caught in the middle a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, but I think that makes it well suited for, like, more aggressive decks, right? Like we were saying, it's good for Nahs. You only take one. So like there's like an Esper Nos list or maybe an Esper Necropotence deck out there or something like that. Or maybe not even Esper, but like maybe it is like Timnachrom colors, then Sands Green, then like maybe some of the more aggressive lists out there want this style of effect or a second copy of Dress Down or something like that, depending on the meta. So
I think it's a really cool card to like have in like your toolbox, kind of like one of those cards that you just keep in your mind as you go. Be like, oh, well, this could come up. This could be cool. This could be interesting. And I think if you really want like an actual board wipe and you're playing like ad nauseum in your deck, I think it's a very strong candidate for that. But also, I think, I don't know, because you don't really play Deluge in Nos decks.
Not if you can avoid it.
Not if you can avoid it. And it kind of circumvents a lot of the reason, or like a lot of the reason that you wouldn't play like a Fire Covenant or like a Deluge in a Nos list. And you know, the ceiling of this card is, yeah, you get to blank some creatures on the battlefield that are problematic and annoying. Like if there are a bunch of stacks creatures out that are preventing you from like breaching or whatever, or Thorkling or whatever, you just wipe the board and then go in.
Yeah, yeah, no, I definitely agree. Oh, I did just remember, though, honestly, probably the most exciting spoiler of the entire set so far, at least for many people.
Oh, yeah?
Mindbreak Trap is finally getting a reprint.
Oh, is it really?
It really is. It's one of, like, the wanted posters or special guests or whatever you want to call them.
Okay, yeah. That's actually huge. That's so bad. The card was, like, what, $80 or something like that?
It is ridiculously expensive for something that is a staple that realistically, like...
Oh, I see, yeah.
I don't know. It's weird that it was not reprinted before this, but we're finally getting one. I think the biggest limiter on this this card is just going to be, like, how difficult it is to obtain these, like, special printings.
Yeah, because I don't really follow how Wizard structures these packs anymore, because that's a Gordian knot of trying to understand shit, and they don't maintain their usual stuff, or like they don't have a standard that they stick to. It changes with every single set, so I kind of just go, is it in the pack somehow? Sure, I guess. Like there, it'll maybe be cheaper, hopefully.
There's a chance to pull it,
I guess, but I don't really buy packs for Magic. Like I'll buy like a random master set, like whatever master says, I'll buy like one or two. Or like I bought a Lord of the Rings collector's pack before the One Ring was found, because I'm like, oh, I'll buy a lottery ticket. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it is at this point, right? It's lottery tickets.
More or less, yeah.
But yeah, that's a super, super cool spoiler.
That's actually massive. I've been waiting for a reprint on that card. I'm actually surprised that it's here. I figured they would save it for like a master set or something like that. But hey, I'll take it. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, hopefully the secondhand market price isn't super high.
Yeah. Okay, kind of the next card I want to talk about. You've been excited about this one. The card is High Noon.
Oh, that card's sweet as heck.
It's an enchantment, one and a white. Each player can't cast more than one spell each turn, so it's rule of law. And then you pay 4 and a red, sack it, deal 5 damage to any target. So if you're in Kitten Loop, it's also an outlet.
It's kind of, depending on your loop. But not really.
Because if you have infinite mana and EWIT, you can kind of loop it.
Yeah, but there are just so many other options, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like it's a low tier option, but it is interesting. I wouldn't look
at this card as an outlet at all.
No,
what
no.
I'm really excited about for this card is it is a true blue rule of law. Just all players cannot cast more than one spell each turn. There are no exceptions. But it is below rate, being 2 mana, and it's incredibly easy to cast, being 1 and a white. And on top of having that like that static effect to just say only one spell per turn per player, which can be an incredible effect in certain pods, I've been calling it asymmetrical. I think it more or less is. Like, it gives you, the player controlling it, the option to break parity on this card whenever you want by saying, okay, so I have played this card on my turn. It affects me first, but it also affected me last because I get to cast all my spells and then jam the rule of law. So I'll go like Land, Sol Ring, Chrome Mox, High Noon. So I've cast 3 spells. And now I'm passing the turn and you get to cast one. But also, then whenever I'm ready to pop off and do my thing, I can pay 5 mana to just crack the High Noon, shoot literally anyone or anything in the face. Maybe there's a different stacks piece that I want to deal with, and I can crack my Rule of Law to blow up that stacks piece, and then storm off on my own turn or your turn or whatever the heck I need slash wanted to do. It's sick. It's really cool. You can do it at end step. There's no instant speed restriction. You can do it as a removal spell, just because you need something dead. You can, like, wait till you go to your turn and, like, cast a spell, cast, like, Grand Abolisher as your spell for turn, and then if you have the mana, you can crack the High Noon and try to win into it, once the Abolisher is resolved, things like that. It's super interesting, and I'm definitely gonna be looking at ways to playtest this card and break it. On top of the fact that, like, it's 2 mana. You can play this card with Lurks. Like, you can like,
which is sick, right?
You cast your Rule of Law, stays around, crack your Rule of Law, go back to your next turn, and cast your Rule of Law again. It's really dumb.
I like that it's 5 damage. 5 damage is like a pretty good damage number to be tossing around. That kills anything. Basically functionally everything. What it doesn't kill Mommy? That's the only, like, relevant card it doesn't kill.
That's a Crated Sphinx, I guess, has 6 times.
Con Sphinx, yeah. I guess it also doesn't kill a Hullbreaker Horror as well, or does it kill Tide Spout? Is Tide Spout 7-6 or something?
Oh, it's a 5-5.
5-5. Okay, kills Tide Spout Tyrant. So, like, it doesn't hit, like, most of the major, like, bomb creatures of the format, but it hits
Nyxflammation, yeah.
But it oh god, it kills Nyxflammation. That's massive.
Yeah.
That's huge. Yeah, I love 5 damage as a bit of removal, and I think, like, 5 mana, 5 damage at instant speed at any rate, but to any target, and it's already a card that, like, you're fine casting on the front side anyway, and it's low on a Nos curve, and you can, like, Soul Ring it out, or, like, Mana Crypt it out, or, like, all any of the million of ways we have to ramp it out.
Oh my god, what a world where we would see an ad nauseum deck playing Rule of Law.
There's a world, right? There is absolutely a world where, like, you just jam you stick a Chrom, you stick a Timna, and you just start bashing in, and then when it's time, when you no longer need the Rule of Law because you've drawn 5.5 million cards, you just crack your Rule of Law after casting a Silence or whatever.
Yeah, this card's gonna be one of the most interesting cards from the set, I think, in terms of, like, how it plays into our format. I'm hoping, at least.
Yeah, I think it has all the trappings of a card that, like, should be in our format. I think it does everything that, like, a card like this is looking for. It's easy to cast. It has an immediate impact. You have your finger on the button. It's removal spell, in a way. And, like, if you want to finagle it, like, and, like, loop it in some weird fashion, you can technically kill the table in it with it. So it's technically an outlet, but I don't think it's a good outlet.
Yes, you're right. I'm very hyped for this card.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be, like, a hated card for me. I think it's going to be an interesting card. I think it's going to be a good card.
Yeah, it's not going to be format warping in any regards, but I do think it will show up and make waves. Sometimes, I think the hardest part is that it's, like, white and red. If it was, like, white and black, this card would see play all over the place, I think.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I've got another white card I want to talk about because I think this guy is really, really funny. It's a Aven Interrupter. It's a 3 mana, 1 double white for a 2/2 bird rogue with flash flying. On ETB, exile target spell. It becomes plotted. Plotted means it can be cast for free on a later turn. And spells your opponents cast from graveyards or from exile cost 2 more to cast. I think this guy's kind of funky. I think he's kind of cool. It does weird, like, creature protection thing. It does a lot of fun things that you want, like, a creature interactive spell to do. 2/2 flash flyer means that it's a pretty decent, like, Timna attacker if you're in, like, those kinds of things. You can hold it open as interaction. It sucks your opponent gets the spell for free later. So it's almost like it's like a really bad delay staple to a creature, kind of. But you have to, like, squint your eyes and look the other way.
But it's not for free as long as this guy's still on the battlefield. It'll cost at least 2 to cast.
It'll cost at least 2 to cast. But also it means, like, you can't really breach Diamond anymore with it out. It makes your margins really, really hard to pull off. I mean, not impossible. It doesn't like hard lock it out of your graveyard.
You start with a lot of cards in the graveyard, yeah.
Yeah, well, you need a lot more cards in the graveyard, and you need a little bit more mana to get going. And it means you can't just like perfectly loop like Breach and Diamond specifically, and you can't really like value Breach. And plus, there's like just a lot of just like random effects that like will just randomly cost two more that it just hates on.
Oh my gosh! Imagine like, oh, there's no Dranith, and like resolving a Mii Betrayal, but right before you resolve the Mii Betrayal, someone flashes this in on you, and you're all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, I can't cast any of these spells anymore.
Well, I mean, you just counter the Mii Betrayal with it.
Yeah, that's basically what it. I guess you could do that too, but then they'd get to cast their Mii Bet for free, so you like let it resolve.
Yeah, it costs two because we told the table not to kill this guy.
Yeah, I'm looking right now. You do have to exile a target if they're illegal targets.
Yeah, that
so
is.
It's not a mech.
Yeah, that is the tough thing. But I think this card is kind of cool. I think I don't know what like style of creature deck it goes in, but it like Sands Blue. It's interesting. I think the deck always wants a counter spell effect, and having it stapled onto a creature is always a plus side. And it's a 3-mana creature too, so it pods away. It's interesting. It's a little bit tough to cast. One double white's a little difficult for most like creature heavy. Four color decks, three colors you can probably get away with it pretty easily, just because that casting cost fights for Ranger Captain very hard, but it's a cool card. I like the little birdie guy.
Yeah, he's really neat. That's a card that popped up, and I was immediately, it had flash on it. I was immediately looking at it for my list.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I also saw flash. I'm like, oh, Atlas is going to consider this card at least a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Card's cracked. What are some other cool cards? Oh, Karavek the Punisher. It's a new mono black commander. There's some people in our area. Someone's working on a list for this card already that looks kind of interesting. So it's black and one for a human warlock that is a 3/3. And Karavek says whenever you commit a crime, exile up to one target black card from your graveyard and copy it. You may then cast that copy. You do have to pay costs, but you may then cast that copy. And if you do, you lose two life. And then for reference on what committing a crime is...
Pull a gun out.
Yeah.
That's committing a crime.
That is committing a crime. Please note, Man on the Rocks does not sanction violence or criminal activity of any sort, blah, 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 blah.
Disclaimer here. Me towards it.
Yeah. but the keyword commit a crime says targeting opponents, anything they control, and or cards in their graveyards is considered a crime. Copies of permanent spells become tokens. That's the actual text from Karavek, so just reading that word for word. But there's a... What is it? It's Eater of the Dead is the cool tech with this card, where you can pay zero. Yeah, you can pay zero, and it, like, exiles a card from the graveyard or something, but it can target the card, and so you can pay zero repeatedly, targeting, like, the same card to create a bunch of copies. Commit a crime on opponent's stuff multiple times. That's what it was. You can target a card in opponent's graveyards repeatedly to commit crimes multiple times, and then exile cards from your graveyard in order to cast copies. And the way that Karavek is worded, he breaks timing restrictions. So
holy shit, it does, because the cast of the spell is on resolution of the ability.
Yeah, you can decide to... Yes, you exile the card from your graveyard when this guy triggers. So you go, like, commit a crime using some spell or ability, and then Karavek triggers, and you are able to target a card in your graveyard to exile, a black card from your graveyard to exile, and you create a copy of that card, and then as the ability is resolving, you choose to cast the copy or not, and then if you do choose to cast the copy, you can lose two life. And so there's some cool tech that I will not spoil that they've been working on, but there's a brewer in our area who's been working on a list for this, and it looks like it cooks a little bit, so very interesting
cool.
To see where it goes.
I didn't realize that it breaks timing restriction.
It does,
like, okay.
Yeah, it does. It's really cool, right?
There's nothing that, like... How does Painter's Servant read? Hold on.
Painter's Servant is affected by this card. Or does affect this card, I should say. And the ability.
All cards that aren't on the battlefield, spells and permanents, are the chosen color in addition to their other colors.
Yeah, so you...
So
yes.
It's cards not on the battlefield, so it does... Okay.
It would provide legal targets for Karavek, so...
Okay. So you can, like, get your rocks out and stuff.
Yeah. You can, like, put a Paint Your Servant into play and name black, and then, like, commit a crime and target your Mana Crypt and cast it from the graveyard or something like that. So.
Okay. What?
A copy of Mana Crypt, I should say.
Yeah, it's a copy of it. Interesting. Okay. Is there a lot of, like, mono black, like, there's gotta be some, like, decent mono black mill stuff, right? Because that's, like, the idea for the deck is, like, you're trying to just dump your deck into your graveyard and then just, like, storm off with this Eater of the Dead guy?
Kind of. I think that's some option for what they have planned. I don't want to spoil too much.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil it. I'm just thinking out loud as I'm reading
this
card.
We'll let them bust out their tech and then we can talk about it. But yeah. It's a super neat card that I definitely think deserved to be mentioned.
Mm-hmm. There's another... It's an uncommon, but this card's kind of cool. It's Lively Dirge. It's another spree card. It's a sorcery. So
this
one
is the Entomb one?
This is the Entomb card. One in the black, plus one, you get to search your library for a card, put into the graveyard, then shuffle straight up Entomb for 3 mana, which is expensive, but there's no restrictions on it. And then the other mode is plus two, return up to 2 creature cards with total mana value 4 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. It's cool.
It's okay.
I think it's a good Rakdos card, but I think the floor, or like the requirement for being a good Rakdos card is pretty low in terms of like the requirements.
The most notable thing about the card, I think, is that there's no, because it's all resolving the same spell, there's no opportunity for an opponent to react to your reanimating a card from your graveyard if you entombed that card with this ability at the same time.
Okay, hear me out. We're going old school. We pay 6 mana, we get to entomb and cast the Necrotic Ooze.
Oh no. We're back on Necrotic Ooze shenanigans.
And you can't snipe it from my graveyard. No.
Just the other things from your graveyard.
Exactly. Well, no, you don't. Okay, come on. You don't need to do that. That's going a little too far. No, this card's cool. I don't know. I like seeing what they do with Entomb effects, especially with Entomb effects that are standard legal, because that's such a, like, oh, I'm sorry, it's not 6 mana, it's 5 mana. I don't know how to do math, which is, like, better-ish, kind of. But even still, like, 4 mana, get 4 CMC worth of guys from your graveyard is, like, okay, it's fine, it's interesting. I just like the Entomb effect. I like seeing Entomb effects on cards, because Entombs are fun.
Okay, well, if we're talking about uncommons, here's another one for you. This card is called Return the Favor, and this is...
Well, I think I know this one, yeah.
This is an effect that I think we've actually talked about wanting before. So I'm actually going to start with the second mode on this card. It's red-red. It's also a spree card. It's red-red for an instant. The second mode is to pay one extra generic, so you're using 3 mana, to change the target spell... change the target of target spell or ability with a single target. So it's like... it's like a limited deflecting swat or
kinda, yeah.
What's the one where you have to, it only costs a red if you have a creature power 4 or greater?
It's literally on the tip of my tongue. Bolt Bend.
That's what it is. It's like a mediocre Bolt Bend, or a very limited D SWAT for the second mode. But the first mode is really what intrigued me. It is Return the Favor is red red, or for its first spree cost, also one generic, and you can copy target instant spell, sorcery spell, which is like cool. It's another dual caster mage style effect, or you can copy target activated ability or triggered ability and choose new targets for the copies. And you do not need to control that activated or triggered ability, which makes this card rather unique amongst all things. It's basically the only effect in the game. You can just, like, somebody else puts a trigger on the stack, and without having any stacks piece or anything like that, you can just say, actually, I'm going to do that trigger before you do.
I'm getting the dark side
exactly
first.
So this is also a card that I am heavily looking at to evaluate, because being able to snipe somebody else's, I don't even know, like, chainer
anything?
Activation, Sisse activation.
Oh my god, just like my chainer activation? That's crazy.
That card came out. We were just talking about Necrotic Ooze. But you can, like, snipe a Sisse activation, a Kinnan activation. You could take somebody's Oracle trigger. You could take a Dockside trigger, an Emile activation. It's absolutely wild. Because it's not even like, you don't even gain control of the ability so you can change the target to a legal target. You just full-on create a facsimile of the effect, and now it can target whatever would be a legal effect for that activated or triggered ability. So, like, somebody plays a Gilded Drake, and you say, oh, that's sick, I'm gonna copy the Gilded Drake trigger.
How does that resolve? Because don't you need a Gilded
Drake? It's really weird. I did look into this when Elishnorn got printed. Basically, it passes the Drake from person to person.
Oh.
Similar to how Chimera works, to where, like, I'm gonna control the Drake, and I'm gonna pass this to you, and then, from there, like, the person with the Drake is going to gain control of this other thing, and you're gonna take the Drake from them. So you can, like, pass creatures around the board.
Okay, so it goes to the third player then, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, okay. It goes to the third player, and the creature of the third player would go to the second player. It's gotcha. It's weird and like a niche interaction, but that's one of those things that you can think about, right? Where you can be like, someone targets your stuff with Gilded Drake, and you're like, oh, okay, that's fine. I'd like to copy the Gilded Drake trigger, and I'm gonna have Gilded Drake target this other thing, and then Gilded Drake's gonna swap with this other thing first.
And then swap with the initial card.
Like, yeah, there's weird ways pass things around and like copy different activations and triggers. Like, I can't even think, like, what would be some other really cool. You copy a one ring trigger, I guess.
Though, yeah, I like a draw trigger.
I think that would resolve at zero though, because you don't have any counters on it, unless it. I don't know, I'd have to actually look that one up, but it'll either copy the counters or it won't.
I don't think you will, because you don't have any burden counters for the ring to reference.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too, unless it's like referencing the original ring whose ability was copied. I don't know, it's weird. But the card's super neat. It's really cool, and I think there's a lot of like potential applications, especially when it's 3 mana to do this effect, just red 1 for like a dual caster mage-esque effect.
Yeah.
Like the style of card where it's not, like, even though it doesn't break the game by being part of an infinite combo directly, the card is copyable and also has spree, so you could also just choose to pay 4 instead of 3, and then for 1 extra generic, you can not only, you can you can snipe a trigger as well as like change the target of a spell or ability.
Which honestly, I think if you're paying 4 for this card, that's such a powerful effect.
That's a great rate.
That's such a great rate for it.
Think about it. You have some sort of ETB on the battlefield, and your opponent that you like, you wouldn't mind seeing recycled. Doesn't even need to be good, but you wouldn't mind seeing it recycled. You have 4 mana. Your opponent goes, all right, I'll spend the remainder of my mana to activate MEL targeting Dockside Extortionist. And you say, great, I'm going to cast Return the Favor. I'm going to target the MEL activation with both modes of the spell, and I'm going to change your MEL activation to your like your Mana Dork, so that it'll have effectively no use. And I'm also going to copy the MEL activation for myself, and like flicker this other creature, whether it's my Dockside or a Spell Seeker, or even as something as simple as just like an ETB like Scry 2 or something.
Just
like
anything,
that.
Really.
Yeah.
Because like I view it like. Okay, thought experiment. Would you run a second dual caster if you could run a second dual caster? Because that's kind of how I have to view this card.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely would. I already am in the form of C-Double, which is like this card would definitely like be vying for a similar slot, right? Where it'd be contesting C-Double for that like weird like niche interaction, copy, stack manipulation-esque style effect. So it's one of those things that I have to evaluate.
Yeah, I like this card a lot. I like these copy, like, I don't, clones are interesting, but I think this card's super funny, just because, like, at worst, it's a bad D-Swat.
Yes,
D-Swat's exactly. A great card.
And it's notable because, like, the base casting cost is just red, so it's just 2, so it is also Spellseekerable. For all the lists that...
Oh, it is Spellseekerable! Oh yeah, my god, so, Spellseekerable dual caster mage that you just hold in your hand. Oh god!
D-Swat, while better, not Spellseekerable.
Not Spellseekerable. That is true. Ooh. Maybe this card goes in Hellcats. Ooh.
Yeah, there's potential here. But yeah, that's a fun one. Another one that I also think, like, way less to say about it, but I think it has a lot of, like, potential to be broken. I'm just not bright enough, and this is not my strategy, like, style of play expertise to be able to break it. It's called Pitiless Carnage. It's black and 3 for a sorcery. It also has plot for black 1, and the effect of the spell says sacrifice any number of permanents you control, that does include lands, draw that many cards. So this definitely strikes me as like maybe like a 2 or 3 color Gnaws or Breach deck style card, where you like, especially for something in like Rakdos, you just go, okay, well, this is our turn. Here we go. We plotted Pitiless Carnage 2 turns ago. I'm going to choose to cast this for free. Sack literally all of my permanents after floating all my mana. I'm going to see where this goes. Just draw all these cards, see where it goes.
My like gut reaction is this is kind of a Korvold style card.
Oh, I think, that'd be sick. Yeah.
I think this does exactly what Korvold wants to do, which is like have like a bit of a setup turn and then just have a turn where it just hits the absolute fuck out of the wall. And I think being able to invest 3 black or 3 mana into it for 1 turn and then just holding it there until you're ready to go, essentially, I think is really, really nice. Because like Reign of Filth is a really good card in Korvold, and I think this card fights for the same bit of oxygen as that card gets, but the payoff is really, really good.
Yeah, I do think Reign of Filth is probably still better because it costs less to cast, it's an instant, it actually generates mana. I mean, this card is neat because it effectively doubles your Korvold triggers.
Yeah, if you have Korvold out, you get to draw a lot of cards.
Yeah, you can be like, okay, well, I'm going to sack 3 lands, draw 6 cards.
I wonder if this is a baby pod card. Just like pay 4 mana, sack all my clues, draw a bunch of cards, just one shot, hold it for a turn, like invest the mana and just be like, yep, I'll be able to eat all my clues at some point.
Yeah, actually, I have no
idea. I actually missed this card when spoilers were coming out. That's it.
It's, yeah, huh. It's something that nobody really mentioned. I don't know. This, I don't play 60 card formats, but this definitely feels like the kind of thing that could also just absolutely break a 60 card format.
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh, cool, we'll get the 3 mana, cast our Pitiless Carnage, live a turn, go to our next turn, win the game.
Yeah, that's kind of how I view this card. I mean, like, at worst, you can just dark grid into this and just hold the card.
Yeah, because you don't have to cast a card the next turn after you plot it. You've plotted the card and it just sits there until you're ready to cast it, as long as you meet the conditions.
Yeah. Yeah, the only like thought I can think of is like, there's not really like a go-wide token deck in CDH.
Not yet. Maybe this is the card that makes it.
Yeah. I don't know, like, we have a Chatterfang at locals, and like every single time I see it, I go, you know, this card, like, Chatterfang does read insane. It just doesn't. It's Golgari. It kind of has issues with win cons and closing games out. But huh, no, this card definitely gets the juices flowing. Definitely gets the gears turning. I'll have to pick this card up and like test it out, because like it's interesting. I like being able to just sack my permanents and just like turn them into just raw card advantage. I don't know. I think this card has like crazy potential, actually.
Yeah, it's cool for sure.
Or maybe like, does this like bring out a whole new deck archetype? I don't think so. I don't know. I'll have to track the card. That's interesting. There are some commanders that we have to talk about that I think are very, very interesting. And I wanna start the game. I wanna start the game out with Gemstone Caverns in play. No, that's not what I'm trying to say. No, there's a new Bant commander that I think is actually pretty cool. Kellen the Kid. Green, white, blue for a 3/3 human fairy rogue. Already really good typing, just kind of all around. 3/3 flying with lifelink. Whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, you may cast a permanent spell with equal or lesser mana value from your hand without paying its mana cost. If you don't, you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. I don't fully know what engine this needs to like break, but this card reads kind of ridiculous.
There's a lot of text on it for sure. Bant is like my favorite color combo right now, so I was definitely looking at it when it got spoiled first, and it like you said, it reads like there's a lot of potential there, but there's, once again, the problem with all of the Bant commanders, right, is like, they're like, guys, we can't make this card too broken, because Bant is the best color combination, so we can't make this too broken, so instead of making the card good, let's staple every single possible condition we can to this card to make it seem like it's good and then impossible to actually break or use in any meaningful way, which I'm afraid is kind of what's happening here. You can cast the spell from anywhere. Okay, great. That's cool. If I cast a spell from the top of my library, from exile with a new plot mechanic, from my graveyard for any reason, off of like my flashback or my breach. Wait, Wait, I'm not in red?
We're not in red?
I can't use Breach? Uh-oh. Okay, well, all the spells that I can cast from Exile now, right? You're like, okay. My commander. My commander comes from the command zone. Wait, this is my commander. Okay. The plot cards, okay? All of the good plot cards and foretell cards. Wait, none of those are good. And just, like, it keeps going down the line, right? Where you're like, man, this card just keeps getting worse and worse. And then on top of that, you can cast a permanent spell with equal or lesser mana value from your hand without paying its mana cost. Okay.
Good wording on that effect.
That is good wording on that effect. It'll break timing restrictions. I can't exceed the mana cost, but that'd be way too, like, strong, especially breaking timing restrictions. So, okay, I get that. And then I get a land if I'm not able to do that. I can put a land card from my hand to play. But what if none of the cards in my hand I want to cast right now? What if they're all interactive spells? Because this is Bant that we're talking about, right? What if there aren't really many cascade options, so we're also out on that front. How are we supposed to abuse this? And that's really all of the Bant commanders, right? There's just like, they put too many limitations on my color slice because they're just so scared of what we could do.
Wizards specifically has it out for you because they know.
For me specifically?
For you specifically, because they know as soon as they print a good Bant commander, it's over. It's just over.
I'm just the Banty boy who wants my good Banty boy commander.
Yeah. You know, I read the card first and I went, huh, this feels like it does a lot. And then as you're listening to the reasons, I'm like, huh, maybe this card doesn't do anything.
But you know what? They did staple Flying and Lifelink to this card for us, so you know what?
Hey,
it has good stats at least.
You could slap a Curiosity on this bad boy and draw cards in the air.
While gaining life.
While gaining life. Strong. For your Gnaws that you can't cast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there really no... Yeah,
not that I can think of. There's nothing that is good enough to like warrant a build around for this card.
Huh.
Not that I can think of.
I figured there was like some sort of like, I guess rebound. Play a bunch of rebound cards.
Name to me all of the good rebound cards, please. I'll wait.
Ephemerate.
Yep. Yeah. I guess there's like Isochron Scepter. Is like the main thing that I thought about. It's like, okay, well, maybe we can do like a build around where we just tutor up Isochron Scepter and like imprint something like medium but okay. But even then, if you do that, right? Like, you're still stuck at like two mana because of the, once again, they stapled that condition to it. It's not just you can play something for free, it's you can play something equal or lesser mana cost for free. So if you do something repeatable like Iso Scepter, you're like, okay. This is really sick. I can instant speed cast my two mana spell, which will be Dockside or Thoracle, because those are really impactful in my colors.
Can't Dockside.
Because I'm allowed to play Dockside. Yeah, I was going to say, because I'm allowed to play Dockside for sure, and I can definitely console onto this Oracle trigger. So
all the things that we cannot do.
Yeah, its card seems so almost good, just like all the other Bant commanders in recent history.
We'll have to get them next time then. Okay, next commander. All right, we're in Sultai. We have Gaunti, Canny Inquisitor. 2 in Sultai for a 5/5 legendary Aetherborn Rogue. Spells you cast but don't own cost 1 generic less to cast. Whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, look at the top card of that player's library, then exile it face down. You may play that card for as long as it remains exiled, and mana of any type can be spent to cast that spell.
Okay, this card I actually think is like pretty good, actually.
I think we're looking at like a new kid on the block.
I don't know if it'll be like one of those things where like it sticks around for forever, but I definitely agree with you where like, I think the card is going to see play. It's going to see like 2 or 3 different builds before it finally settles down into whatever it wants. And I think it's powerful enough. One of our friends has already been working on a build for this actually, and they've been calling it Sultai Breach, because that's a big part of the list is just like stealing other people's breaches. And like you can go off in various ways with it. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of, like, neat stuff to do with the card. I won't spoil all of the things that we brainstormed together, but we were working on that, and it seems like it has legs for sure.
There's a lot of very efficiently costed ways to like look at the top of people's decks and stack them.
Yes. Yeah. A lot more than you would think, for sure.
Yeah. That was because I went through the list that y'all had kind of cooked up. And as I'm reading these cards, I'm like, all of these effects are like 1 and 2 mana. What the hell?
Yeah, they are not terrible, that's for sure.
No, no, like, they're decently static cards. Yeah.
The effects frequently are like just kind of like they're kind of medium, but like they're kind of medium even without your commander, and then you stay from the commander to it, and then suddenly you're going, this is actually kind of cool. So this like feels strong.
Yeah, I steal your stuff. It's also forever. It's also, I think, it's templated in the way that all the good, like, steal your cards and keep them in exile are templated, where, like, even if the commander's gone, like, you can still cast them. You can still do the thing with them.
Yeah, the effect is stapled to the card, similarly to Opposition Agent. And just like Oppo, you can also use mana of any color to cast the card, which is really important.
It's also a 5/5 for 5. It hit.
It does. It's just on rate. It's just a good card.
I'm very curious to see where this card goes. I think of any of the commanders that have come out in the set, I think this one is like the most poised for like, yeah, it's new kid on the block. I think it has some serious potential.
Interesting. I think my pick for new kid on the block is actually, I got 2 options and I'm waffling. I'll just give you both.
Yeah, just give me both.
So the first one is Rakdos the Muscle.
Really?
He's black, black, red, and 2 for a 6/5 demon mercenary. That's flying and trample. Says, whenever you sacrifice another creature, exile cards equal to its mana value from the top of your target player's library. Until your next end step, you may play those cards and mana of any type to cast those spells. So not just your library to begin with. It can exile the cards from the top of any player's library. And then it also has the effect, sacrifice another creature. Rakdos the Muscle gains indestructible until end of turn. Tap it, activate only once each turn. And this effect can be done at instant speed, which is also pretty notable. So the reason that I like this card a lot is because it is an infinite sacrifice outlet in the command zone, in that you can sacrifice another creature multiple times in the same turn, triggering Rakdos multiple times in the same turn, because the once per turn clause is not attached to its triggered effect. And then you can exile cards from target player's library, which means you can exile all of your opponent's libraries and cast those cards using mana of any color until your
next end step.
You can actually just play, so you can even use lands that are exiled this way. You can play lands from that, which I think is super notable. So not only can you exile your opponent's libraries and then cast all those cards to win the game right then, you can also like win it instant speed really easily by doing like just finding some way to execute some sort of like persist or undying loop or something like that, and then it just immediately exiles all your opponent's libraries kind of like on the spot, more or less, which like it's kind of hard to come back from having your entire library exiled like by any stretch of the imagination, right?
Especially if there's like blue at the table, like if you just have mana, like you just have counter spells now as well.
Yeah, exactly. Because all that stuff's online. You can play free spells, because you can use alt costs to cast them and things like that, the way that the effect is worded. And it also says you can sacrifice another creature with his activated ability to prevent him from getting like Assassin's Trophied if someone's running some sort of destroy effect or something like that, right? He can't be destroyed because he gains that ability until end of turn, but you can just sacrifice a creature, which means that if someone top deck tutors, or if there's some other like reason that you could even be the one to top deck tutor, and you can then immediately play that card until your end step. And it's once per turn, so if you have multiple bodies to sacrifice, like some sort of like Bitter Blossom token generator style thing, or maybe like Jada or Jada, who makes decayed tokens at the end of your turn, like you can use those.
Yeah,
you can like sack a decay token on your turn, exile the top 2 cards of your library, be like, okay, play this, cast that, pass the turn, end step, my Jada's gonna trigger, and then I'm gonna make another 2/2 decay token, pass on your turn, I'm also gonna sack the decay token, eat the top 2 cards of your library, because I know that you top deck tutored or something like that. So I think this card is like really neat. It cracks doomsday piles, which is a big thing for
everyone. Every Rakdos in Jar is losing their mind right now. It cracks the doomsday pile.
It like that's like when your win cons are so limited, like your options are so limited in Rakdos, right? And this is literally Rakdos too. So it's like in red black, the red black guy is doing the red black thing. It's very flavorful in my opinion. The stats are fantastic. It has Flample, 6/5, so commander damage is like beats is a super real thing, and it's a J-Lo commander. You can jeweled Lotus this commander in on like one or two super duper easily by just going easily. Land Lotus Petal, Jeweled Lotus, cast Rakdos on one. Not necessarily something you would want to do, but like post ad nauseum, because this deck seems like it would lend fairly well to a Nos style of like gameplay.
Probably
you could just like cast Nos end step or main phase or whatever you're jamming it. Find a bunch of rocks, ritual out like Rakdos and whatever your combo is, whether it's Doomsday and like any guy, maybe it's a Memnite. Maybe you find a pile where you only need to see one card to crack the pile, right? And so you find J-Lo, Mana Crypt, Lotus Petal, cast Rakdos, cast Memnite, cast Doomsday off of like a Dark Ritual or a Rain of Filth or something, and then you just sack Memnite to Rakdos and you're off to the races. Because it's power, right? Oh, mana value. Okay, so maybe the Memnite thing doesn't quite work, but
the idea is there.
The idea is there. There's for sure space. I think this card's super duper broken.
What a world we live in that you're getting crazy about the Rakdos card.
I also just think this card is really strong and has a lot of potential.
Go for it.
No, I was, please, what were you gonna say? What was your other thought?
I was just gonna comment on how, like, I think I saw this card and, like, my eyes just kind of, like, glazed over. I'm so used to, like, Rakdos commanders just being, like, the same thing
just very all blah. The time.
Just very, like, whatever. Like, if is it better than Obnixilus? No? Okay, moving on. I think this card does a lot of different things than Obnix, though.
That's why I like it. It's like, I don't think it's necessarily better. I definitely see the potential for it to be worse, right? It's not passive like Ob is. It is more expensive. It does not scale, but it does have Flample, which is notable, because I think Ob also has Flying and Trample. And so, like, it's got that going for it as well. But this is just a different approach to, the Rakdos game plan, right? This card definitely strikes me as more turbo-y than mid-rangey, and Ob
very much so, yeah.
More mid-rangey, because you have to, like, build in these, like, pinger effects and things like that, things that are a little bit more slower and suboptimal, kind of just like inherently, where you're counting on your opponents to trigger your Ob for you, like with fetch lands and whatnot, so it seems okay. But my other pick for new kid on the block, my other option is also, now calm down everybody, it's also not a blue commander. It's
who even are you,
right? This card is Girid, Mirror of the Wilds. It is a Naya commander, so at red, green, and white, you get a 3-mana 3/3 that has haste and says, non-token creatures you control have tap. Create a token that's a copy of target token you control, not target creature token, target token you control that entered the battlefield this turn. Now, while I'm not entirely sure all of like the connotations for like what exactly this can get up to, I do think that it is very interesting to have an effect that copies and like effectively proliferates or like Kikijiki-esque effects any type of token permanent, on top of which it already has a one card combo in the existence of Felidar Guardian, because simply playing a Felidar Guardian means that you can use any creature to tap him to I guess even Girid, right? Because he has haste. So you tap Girid, create a token of target, or create a token of target of target token. So I guess you need a way to. I guess it's not a one card win con. I was processing it in my mind. And I was like, oh, I read it a little bit wrong.
But you need some sort of igniter to make a token.
Yeah.
Of the effect that you really want to like keep copying, but because it's hard for it to make. It's hard for it to work with Felidar specifically because you need Felidar Guardian on the battlefield, you need Girid on the battlefield, and you need a token copy of Felidar.
Yeah.
Because you need to... You tap the token copy, it's target token, not another, so you can target itself. so you can make infinite... No, because you can't even make infinite ETBs because the tokens don't have haste.
Oh, you're right. Okay, so I'm just totally wrong. Yeah, no, I just completely misassessed this card. When I read it. All right.
It's very, very close. I think in the same way.
It has potential, like, but it's not the new kid on the block. The new Rakdos has just solidified his spot as new kid on the block.
Yeah, I think this is almost like Kellen level, where like you read this card, almost the exact opposite of what I went through. Where like I read this card and go, it's so close. Everything on here is so, so close. It's just very carefully shifted in the safe direction. Non-token creatures you control have tap, create a token that's a copy of target token. So you need some way of already generating a token of the thing that you want to make a token of. And the non-creatures being able, or non-tokens being able to tap to make a token is really, really cool. There's a lot of easy ways to do that. Like you're playing a lot of mana dorks in this deck already. So being able to have your dorks be able to tap to what's the mechanic? Not proliferate.
Convoke.
No, not convoke. It's the exact. It makes a token. It's the Silesnia mechanic.
I got nothing.
Yeah. Oh God, it's gonna murder me. It's not proliferate. I keep saying proliferate in my head, but I know it's not proliferate. Doesn't matter. It makes more tokens of the tokens that you already have. So you already need to be...
Populate.
That's the effect that I'm thinking of. It populates. Non-token creatures you control have tap populate. Which is, cool. But again, you still need something that's worth copying, and you still need to be able to make a copy of that token in order for you to just keep populating
and that token has to have entered the battlefield this turn. That's the case.
And it has to have entered the battlefield this turn. So that effect needs to be, pretty mana efficient.
That's why I think that's why I thought that it comboed off with Guardian, is the whole enter the battlefield this turn, and I kind of skimmed it, and I was like, oh, okay, so Felder can come in and it'll create a token of itself and be able to tap, and but yeah, you're right, it does without all those other effects. There are a lot of hoops to jump through. Not that this card doesn't have legs, I'm sure that it can be brewed to a competitive level to some extent, but it'll be a little bit more niche than I was anticipating based on my first reading of the card.
Yeah, it if there is a good enabler out there and it's really consistent at getting that enabler, and the enabler is good outside of the commander, definitely possible. I mean, at the very least, you can make a lot of tokens of Dockside. Also, the tokens stick around, too. They don't sacrifice themselves.
Notably, yeah. They do not sack at end step. So that's kind of cool. But
I wonder if you can do, Fable of the Mirrorbreaker stuff, I guess. That's a card I've been looking at recently. Yeah.
Somebody out there will find a card that we do not know off the top of our heads exists, and
then 100%. It'll
pop off with this, and we'll go, oh, that's so clever, or I totally forgot that this Lorwyn card existed or something
this card from the 15th Return to Ravnica, there's actually mad synergy with it. Yeah, I know, something like that. It reads like it needs one enabler for this card to go absolutely buck wild, and then it's gonna go crazy.
Yeah, but okay, so with all of that said, my pick for new kid on the block, definitely Rakdos. I think that card is crazy strong. And that card I did read very thoroughly when I first saw it. Because I knew that after the first read, I was like, this card seems strong. I had to have misread it. And then I read it multiple times and unfortunately realized that I did not. Because when I see a good red-black commander, that makes me sad.
Us Rakdos enjoyers and our turbo game plans, we've had it good for too long.
I just want good blue commanders, good blue-white commanders, and good blue-white-green commanders, which they are still not giving me.
But Kellen the Kid is so close.
He's so broken, right?
We just talked about how good he is. What a weird world. My pick for a new kid on the block is the blue commander. Your pick on the block is the Rakdos guy.
Gosh dang. Turned upside down.
It's so funny.
I think there's a cool new commander. I don't know if it's good, but there is a cool new commander in blue that I liked. Like just seems like they'd be fun. Very much my playstyle. The new Ariette. Ariette the Beguiler is Esper and 1 for a 4/4 with lifelink. She says whenever an aura you control becomes attached to a non-land permanent an opponent controls, not even a creature, but a non-land permanent, with mana value less than or equal to that aura's CMC, gain control of that permanent for as long as that aura is attached to it, which is kind of neat.
This card does read like something that you would enjoy.
I do like taking control of other people's stuff. Like playing with other people's lists.
People make good lists. That means they do. You should borrow them from time
I like borrowing the best parts of everyone else's list at the table I'm playing.
Also, like, is there? I feel like there's enough like control or like enough like whatever an aura you control becomes attached to a non-land permanent opponent control. So you want to like I'm blanking on every card in existence. The illegitimate businessman aura.
You want to gain control of a 1/1 permanently?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Why not?
I mean, you can do that. I think you attach like just value like auras onto stuff like curiosity effects onto your creature and then like steal it and then hit them and draw a card.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. Sort of like just good mind control esque stuff. But I'm not sure about it. We'll see. The other card that I was thinking about, where is it?
I got two different ones. I don't know if they're new kid on the block, but I think they're in that like interesting category.
Is one of them the Izzet Commander?
One of them is the Izzet
Commander. I knew it. That's the card that I was just looking for.
Okay, I found it. So the new Izzet Commander, because there's another cool Izzet Commander, Stella Lee Wildcard, 1 blue-red for a human rogue that's 2/4. Whenever you cast your second spell each turn, exile the top card of your library. Until end of your next turn, you may play that card. You can tap her, copy target instant or sorcery you control. You may choose new targets for the copy, activate only if you've cast 3 or more spells this turn. I think the thing that breaks this card is Dramatic Reversal, exactly.
I don't even think so, right? I think there's a lot of... The reason I like this card is because I think there's so many more than just one card that break this. Mm-hmm. I think there's for sure Dramatic Reversal, right? That can generate infinite mana and other styles of effects super duper easily by untapping her and doing like an Iso Scepter type deal from the command zone. Plus she's got pseudo card advantage stapled to her with the impulse draw off the second spell cast, right? So you cast your first spell, second spell, you get a little bit of something, and then the third spell, you can not only have a fourth spell that is the extra effect of that card if you activate her, which is also the combo piece. But yeah, there are a lot of cards that can go infinite with her, like more than Scepter, right? It's like this one here actually just kills the table on the moment it's your third spell. And it's Twisted Fealty. It's red and 2 for a Wilds of Eldraine card. It says, gain control of target creature till the end of turn. Untap that creature. It gains haste until end of turn. You can then create a Wicked Roll token attached to up to 1 target creature. If you control another roll on it, put that roll into the graveyard. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1. And when this aura is put into the graveyard, each opponent loses 1 life. It's cool because this card's a sorcery, and the way that Stella works, you can even just like cast 2 cantrips over the top. You can go like Twisted Fealty, Brainstorm, and then like Thought Scour or something, right? Mental Mist up your Brainstorm, and then you can copy your Twisted Fealty, even though it's lower down on the stack, and that is going to gain control of Stella, untap her, and then you can tap her again to create another copy of Twisted Fealty, and then the Wicked Roll token attaches to
Stella. New one falls off and the
yep, and then the old one falls off, each opponent loses a life, and then you repeat the process and kill the table off the drain.
That's kind of sick.
Yeah, there's also other effects like that too that have similar things where they're gonna like just untap Stella to either draw a card or like generate a treasure or something like that, where you can just like pop off with whatever the additional effect of the untapping spell is. It might go off with something like Dream's Grip, which is an Orvar card typically, but you can, it's a one mana instant with Entwine, so you can either tap target permanent or untap target permanent. So you could use this card to tap down the entire table at instant speed, I guess, if it's your third spell.
I mean, you can just do Magecraft stuff with this, because if you're able to activate the tap ability, you untap target permanent, Stella's live, you copy it on the stack, make a copy of Dream Script to untap the permanent, and then tap it again to put another spell in the second, so you can theoretically infinitely Magecraft.
Yeah, for sure. Kari Zeb's Expertise is another style of effect.
Ooh, I love Kari Zeb's Expertise.
It seems like really medium as far as an outlet spell goes, but it once again allows you to make infinite untaps of your commander, and then you can cast all of the two costs in your hand for free. Mm-hmm. So it's like super duper medium, but it does allow you to cast all the two costs in your hand. And then infinite Magecraft, woohoo! So yeah,
I think the fealty card is the card that I'm like, yeah, that's a real card for this deck.
Yeah, right. That's super good. I think a lot of the Orvar style cards though could potentially work, right? Because a lot of them just like tap or untap something, like Jolt. You can go off and like jolt up on somebody's end step right before your
turn. I'm gonna jolt you.
You're gonna jolt. So you're gonna go like counterspell. Oh, at your end step, cast Jolt targeting. Targeting Stella Lee, copy Jolt, untap Stella Lee, and then just stack a bunch of slow trips so that at the beginning of your upkeep, you draw basically like what's effectively your entire library.
Nearly your entire library, yeah. Main
phase, and then go off, right? So like things like that, I think. And she's only what, 3 mana? 4 mana?
Yeah.
3 mana. For 2/4.
Which is a decent stat line.
And a rogue, which is like becoming a super relevant creature type from this set and like the last 2 or 3 sets, I think. Like typing like rogue really starts to matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think of like the weirder, like, is it stormy commanders that we have. I think it does an interesting thing. You can also just like generically just copy spells. Like you can just cast like 2 cantrips and then cast like, I don't know, Jessica's Will, copy of Jessica's Will, just go crazy.
That does seem like it would go pretty hard.
And then if you can hit like any sort of like untap effect that cantrips it, and it's an instant and you can cast it, you can just keep casting like a Jessica's Will or like, I don't know, Wheel of Fortune or whatever like your payoff like instant or sorcery like spellcraft combo is.
Yeah, the more we talk about it, the more this list is striking me as something along the lines of like maybe a little bit better Vadrick, right?
Maybe, yeah. I think it's like Vadrick out for sure.
Yeah, it's like that same style of like we're trying to use these cantrips to do this thing, but now we don't have to play all the weird like weird kind of like bad power adjusting effects to get our cost reductions to cast other spells to do things.
Mm-hmm. We can just cast good cards.
We can or at least less bad cards, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, like we're playing some amount of cantrips and twiddles, so yeah.
Those cantrips a lot of bad... will like draw our library or like kill the table, as opposed to Vadrick stuff is like a lot of them are like, well, we're gonna untap some lands and cast this again to do this again, I think, and do this again maybe, and like generate some mana and hopefully draw into something so we can do it again. So this definitely seems to replace that sort of like cantrip is it commander in the competitive scene though.
Yes, I like this card a lot. I cannot wait to sit at a table and watch it combo off for 30 minutes.
Oh, joy. Is it combo decks?
I love Is it combo decks. They're my favorite. I like Is it combo decks. I think they're fun. When I first saw this card and we were, James was like, oh, I'm brewing this card because he's our Is it guy. I'm like, you should look at Orvar. There's a lot of like twiddle effects that they play all the good twiddle effects. Like start there for like your base because then just like pick like the best like 3 or 4 ones from them and just jam them in.
Yep. Yeah, and really just, good spot to start.
Just go from there. All right. That kind of covers all the cards I wanted to cover.
Yeah, I think those are Hold on.
How have we gone this long and we haven't talked about Vraska?
I was just about to say, I think the only one we might not have mentioned that we would want to cover is Vraska.
Yeah, hold on. How did... Literally right next to Kellen the Kid. And
give
we just
us,
completely...
Give us the text.
All right, so the text is Vraska the Silencer. It's one black green for a legendary Gorgon assassin with Death Touch. So 3/3 Death Toucher on a 3-mana body. Whenever a non-token creature an opponent controls dies, you may pay one generic. If you do, return that card to the battlefield tapped under your control. It's a treasure artifact with tap, sacrifice this color, add one mana of any color, and it loses all other card types. Why does this card matter? Because Kill Your Guy, it enters the battlefield under my control, tapped as a treasure. Also, it gets all the ETBs and all the static abilities on there as well. So, my removal spells, I just yoink your guy now. And it's mana when I get to untap.
Yep. Yeah. It's so strong. You just, like, cast your own Bowmaster, shoot somebody else's Bowmaster, and for 3 mana, you get 2 Bowmasters, one of which is un-Bowmasterable. It's kind of wild.
Or you get to just use the Bowmaster for mana.
Yeah, it's really, it's a very strong card.
We talked a lot about this card when it first got spoiled, and I read the card initially, I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, that's interesting, and then I reread the card and went, oh, wait a minute, this gets the ETBs of the card too? Yeah, this card's insane.
Yeah, it's someone neoforms something that has an ETB. Like, someone neoforms their Dockside, and you can pay a mana to yoink their Dockside over to your side of the field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's one of those cards that you'll just, like, run out there as, like, an early developmental piece, and it'll just, like, nabby random value just constantly.
Yep, when someone sacks their, what, like, Dockside or their, I don't know, Spellseeker or something to their Culling the Weak, and you're like, ah, yes, I will pay one to take that effect, please.
You have this out there, someone's dealing with the Tidespout Tyrant or the Hullbreaker Horror, and you go, ah, yes, mine now, please.
When Opposition Agent gets bolted or Bowmaster to death, and you can just put it right back, right?
Mm-hmm. Someone kills the Dranith Magistrate, and you go, nah, buddy, you're under it now.
Yeah, it's seems very potent. Very potent.
Mid-range hell continues on, ladies and gentlemen. We have the new mid-range piece. It's a good card, though. I don't know where it's going to fit into most decks. I know me and you are going to try and jam it into our respective lists. I don't know if a lot of decks can afford it generically, though. I think it can, but I think it competes for a lot of the same spots that a card like this would fit in with.
Yeah, I think the hardest part about this card is going to be making sure that your list enables it effectively enough without something like Bowmasters, or without something like additional random like keyword kill spells, because a lot of the removal right now is exile or bounce based. Mm-hmm. I feel like Golgari lists, or like maybe 3-color lists with a green black base, will probably want to play this card, but more than that, it's going to be a little bit more niche for sure, just because otherwise, if you aren't playing those destruction effects, it's going to be more or less banking on the fact that your opponents are going to end up sacrificing or getting their own stuff killed off, whether it's through blocks or something like that at some point. And so it'll
makes combat a nightmare.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit more interesting though, because, like, to be honest with you, I think most of the time, like, a dork dying to a Bowmaster is not something you're going to want to invest 1 mana into stag, especially because the treasure it creates is tapped, so yeah. It makes you vulnerable to a Dockside blowout. If, like, a Bowmaster kills 2 dorks and you pay 2 mana, you are now 2 mana down to interact, and you have two tapped liabilities on the battlefield. Mm. So, just asking for someone to cast a Dockside and win the game off it. So, I think the cards that it has to snag need to be a little more impactful, and it's going to be interesting to see how this pans out.
Yeah, I definitely don't think you just, like, nab whatever you can. I feel like you definitely have to be selective just with, like, the hedging against Dockside thing. Because I think anyone that plays a Dockside in their list, they see a Vraska go on the battlefield and go, okay, how often are you going to pay into this, though? Because I want to Dockside you. At least That's where my brain goes.
No, that's kind of what I was thinking, too. It's like, just, you have to be careful, like, because maybe 2 or 3 juicy targets do hit the bin. Like, somebody sacrifices, I don't know, a Hullbreaker Horror. And that's really cool right up until you use your last mana to copy it. It's tapped. You have no spells. You can cast for free. And someone resolves a Dockside, and that last mana was what they needed to turn on their combo or something.
I'm very curious to see it in play and see how it goes. Because I think all the talk behind it is very, very good. But I think it's one of those cards that might have maybe a little too much hype behind it, and maybe not enough payoff in actuality.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
Okay, Now I actually think we've covered all the cards we want to cover.
Yeah, I think that is everything that stood out to me within the set so far.
Excelente. Well, first set review in the books. Yeah, boy. Longest yeah, boy ever. Atlas, thank you as always for joining me.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Absolutely. And everybody listen, we'll catch you next time.